Welcome to the August edition of Ranger Rick, published by the National Wildlife Federation. I'm Chris Radio volunteer Linda Lydon. The front cover of this month's magazine features a koala. Reader Riddles. What do you call an insect that performs magic? A hocus pocus locus. That comes from William I. in California. What reptile likes to go bowling? An alligator. That comes from Gracie Y. in Michigan. What's a rabbit's favorite frozen treat? A hopsicle. That comes from Everett C. in New York. What do trees wear to pool parties? Swimming trunks. That comes from Yvonne J. in Washington. Who's in charge when dogs play soccer? The referee. That comes from Sydney W. in Arizona. Where do ducks eat their lunch at school? In the quackateria. That comes from Nehemiah P. in Florida. And what happens when a frog's car breaks down? It gets towed away. That comes from Eric F. in Washington, D.C. Defending koalas. Koalas eat, sleep, and care for their babies up in trees. So what happens when forests disappear? Welcome to Australia, the only place where adorable, fuzzy koalas live in the wild. The koala mama at left is strolling on the ground with her little one on her back. But the safest place for them is up in the trees. Dogs, cars, and other hazards can injure or kill koalas on the ground. Lately, terrible wildfires in Australia have killed many trees there, and even before that, people have cleared large areas of forest to make way for buildings, farms, and roads. Most of the koala's habitat has vanished since the Europeans settled in Australia in 1788. Now people are trying to pass laws that protect the remaining trees. They are also planting new trees. Let's follow one young koala as it grows up and discovers why it is so important to protect its leafy world. Growing up koala. Koalas are marsupials. A marsupial spends the first part of its life inside its mother's cozy pouch. When a baby koala, or Joey, is born, it is tiny. It looks like a pink jelly bean. Luckily, it already has strong forearms and claws, which help it climb to the pouch. Once there, it finds a nipple and latches on for milk. The Joey has a lot of growing to do. For the first 6 months, it might come out for a quick look around, but most of the time it is sheltered inside the pouch. When the mother moves around in the trees, she squeezes the pouch shut to keep the Joey safe. A Joey will stay snug inside a mom's pouch for most of the first 6 months of its life. Eventually, the Joey starts eating a special type of baby food made by its mother. It's called pap, and it's made from koala poop. That may sound gross, but it's how the mother makes sure the baby's tummy is ready to eat the special leaves that koalas need to survive. Once the Joey is too big for the pouch, up on Mama's back it goes. As well as Mama climbs around in the trees, the Joey learns all about being a koala. Soon the Joey will begin to take short trips away from its mother to practice climbing, but Mom is never too far away. Fun fact, koalas have fingerprints, as do some apes and you. Favorite meal. Soon as it's time for the Joey to start munching on eucalyptus leaves, those are almost the only kind of food that grown-up koalas eat. Eucalyptus is a strange thing to eat. It is not very nutritious. It's hard to digest, and it's poisonous to most animals. But a koala's stomach has a special way to break down the leaves. And koalas sleep 18 to 20 hours a day. That way, they can save up enough energy to digest their favorite food. All grown up. Even though it may look soft and squishy, a koala has a lean and muscular body that's built to climb trees. Rough pads on its hands and feet grip the bark. Five fingers on each hand and foot are also good for hanging on. Most koalas rub their chest on the trees to leave their scent. This is to tell other males, keep away, this is my tree. When it's time to mate, male koalas try to attract females by bellowing. It sounds like a mix of a snore and a growl. But before the joey learns the adult world, it usually stays close to its mother for a few years. Once it goes out on its own, it will live alone in a small neighborhood of trees. The buzz. Scientists speak. Passion for the ocean. Sarah McClutney is a biologist who studies squid, but she loves all ocean creatures, including the crab she's holding here. She runs a program called Skype a Scientist, which lets children video chat with real scientists. Let's dive in and learn more about her. Question: what got you excited about ocean life? Answer: when I was about 8 years old, I watched a nature show about cuttlefish, which are cousins of squid. Cuttlefish are very odd-looking animals with football-shaped bodies and W-shaped pupils in their eyes. In this show, the cuttlefish were doing a behavior called passing cloud. That means they were making dark bands of color travel across their body in waves. They were so otherworldly looking, I fell in love with squid and cuttlefish. Then and there, squid, cuttlefish, and octopuses all belong to the same group of animals. They're called cephalopods. Question: how do scientists study squid? Answer: some scientists snorkel or scuba dive to study shallow water squid. Some send robots to take videos and photos to study deep sea squid. In my world, I wanted to know how squid and bacteria interact with each other. So we collect some squid from the ocean and brought them back to the lab where they live in tanks. That way we can study them closely. Question: what is one amazing squid fact, or two or three facts? Answer: how about four? Fact 1, squid have blue blood. Fact 2, squid have beaks. Fact 3, squid have three hearts. 4, squid and other cephalopods have been on Earth for more than 500 million years. That's longer than trees have been here. Question: what are some fun things about being a squid biologist? Answer: the two best things about being a squid biologist for me are going out into the ocean to find squid and sharing new knowledge. I love spreading squid knowledge with others. It's almost as good as getting into a wetsuit and swimming with the squid. Eco dog. What's black and white, walks on four legs, and is environmental hero? Scruff the border collie. This 13-year-old dog has always loved to play fetch. A few years ago, he started picking up plastic bottles he found on his walk around his hometown in Nuneaton, England. Soon, his owners began taking bags with them to collect the bottles for recycling. And they also started counting. Since the beginning of 2022, Scruff has collected more than 1,600 plastic bottles. Scruff's owner shares his adventures on social media. Soon, news organizations picked up on the story. Scruff is now known worldwide as Eco Dog, but his fame hasn't gone to his head. He's just happy to get smiles and scratches behind the ears from everyone he meets. To see what Scruff is up to, grab a parent and search for Scruff's Bottle Patrol on Facebook. Prehistoric Christmas present. Molly Sampson, age 10, is a kid paleontologist. That means she studies fossils. She lives in Maryland near the Chesapeake Bay, where she often goes fossil hunting. Last Christmas, she pulled on a pair of insulated waders, the first gift of the day, and headed out with her dad to the beach. There she unwrapped a second gift. This gift was from nature, the half-buried tooth of a megalodon. Megalodon is an extinct species of giant shark. These huge fish ruled the Earth's oceans millions of years ago. Scientists think the tooth is 15 million years old. It is not too hard to find the tooth of a Meg, but Molly was really big, 5 inches long, and that had to have come from a very big shark. Why? Because 1 inch of tooth equals 10 feet of body length. That means that Molly's tooth came from a 50-foot-long shark, about the size of a trailer or a semi-truck. And scientists think that the shark wasn't even fully grown. For Molly, the tooth is the prize of her 400-tooth collection. She hopes kids like you will try hunting for fossils, too. When you find a fossil, you're the first human to ever touch it, she says. Molly's advice, don't give up. If you don't find something right away, just keep hunting. Open Coral Reef Cafe. Fresh seafood served daily. Welcome to the Coral Reef Cafe. It's just your average cafe, except the customers who dine here have fins, gills, claws, or even tentacles. They find their favorite foods at this busy, crowded place, while trying not to become meals themselves. Dive in to see what or who is on the menu. Soft food diet. One of the most popular menu items at the Coral Reef Cafe is the coral itself. A coral group is made up of tiny, soft-bodied animals called polyps. They are two kinds of coral. Soft corals, such as the one grown on a flexible stem. Hard corals build their own stony skeletons, which over time form reefs that can be seen from space. Many animals, such as some kinds of sea stars, fishes, crabs, and snails, munch on coral polyps. Bite-sized treats. The small pointy mouth of a Bennett's butterfly fish is perfectly shaped for plucking the tiny coral polyps. The fish uses its lips to slurp them right up, and the big eye spots on its back could scare off enemies that might want butterfly fish for lunch. Soups on. These tiny alien-looking things may not look very appetizing to you, but for lots of cafe customers, they're the main course. The things are plants and animals called plankton. Billions of microscopic plankton drift along in the ocean, making up a living soup for animals to eat. Lunch is on me. This moray eel isn't opening wide for a meal. It's getting its teeth cleaned by a cleaner shrimp. The cleaner shrimp is the one getting a meal. It cleans tiny bits of food from the eel's mouth and between its teeth, and it eats them up. Pardon my reach. A hungry cuttlefish cruises around the cafe, searching for today's special. What will it be? A crab? A fish, perhaps? In addition to having 8 arms, the cuttlefish has 2 long tentacles. It reaches them out with lightning speed to grab prey. Then it uses its sharp beak, located in the center of its arms, to eat its meal. Hold the poison. Tasty sponges are the usual order for the hawksbill turtle at the cafe. Though the sponges contain poison, the turtle isn't bothered by it. But it will eat other foods, too. Today it's having a less spicy meal, using its narrow, pointy beak to slice off bits of soft coral. Fish food. The sun anemone mostly sits in one place. It can't chase after prey, but it doesn't need to. When a tasty animal such as this fish comes close, the anemone zaps it with its stingers and in its tentacles. Venom from the stingers keeps the fish from moving so the anemone can swallow it up. Burp. Food poisoning. This beautiful nudibranch might seem like a slurpable snack, but diners beware. The nudibranch has a trick. It can eat poisonous prey and then store the poison in its own body. The poison doesn't hurt the nudibranch, but it could mean trouble for a nudibranch enemy that tries to take a bite. All you can eat. To this parrotfish, the cafe is like a salad bar. The fish uses its beak-like teeth to scrape off plants like algae to eat. But as the parrotfish bites, it also breaks off pieces of the crunchy coral reef in the fish's stomach. The algae gets digested and the coral gets ground up into sand. Then the parrotfish poops out the sand and lots of it. The best kind of parrotfish may poop out hundreds of pounds of sand each year. Big gulp. When you go out to a restaurant, you don't have to worry that other customers might eat you. But at the Coral Reef Cafe, it happens all the time. This hungry lizard fish is making a meal of a smaller triggerfish. Just another day at the Coral Reef Cafe. 5 reasons to love bugs. Are you bugged by insects and other creepy crawlers? Don't be. Most bugs are good guys. In fact, after you read this list, you might want to give a bug a hug. What's a bug? Many people use the word bug to mean any kind of insect or other creepy crawly. But scientists and other experts use the words to mean only a certain kind of insect they call a true bug. Fact number 1, they battle bad guys. To farmers and gardeners, some insects can be real pests. Aphids, certain caterpillars, and others love to eat plants people grow for food or fun. Keeping those pests under control is a tough job. Good thing there's a whole army of insects eating insects around. The tiny green aphids here are slurping up sap from the stem of a plant until a lacewing swoops in to eat them. The lacewing may eat hundreds of aphids during its short life. If a yellow Colorado potato beetle eggs in the small photo at top were to hatch, the hungry larvae could strip all the leaves from a potato plant and even kill it. But a lady beetle will eat the eggs and save your future French fries. 2, they recycle waste. Every day, all around the world, millions of tons of animal dung plop to the ground. Dung is another word for poop. Imagine what happened if all the poop kept piling up. One reason it doesn't, dung beetles. When a dung beetle finds a fresh pile of poop, it breaks off a bite and rolls it into a ball, as the parrot left is doing. Then it may roll the ball back to its nest, where it lays eggs inside of it. The eggs hatch into grubs, beetle larvae, which are surrounded by all the food they need. Bugs recycle other ways too. Think of all the leaves, dead branches, and even whole trees that fall in the forest each year. They'd pile up in a hurry if it weren't for insects, roaches, earwigs, crickets, and other beetles, such as stag beetles, all eat the fallen leaves or wood. As those hungry insects munch away, they produce droppings, and soon those droppings become a part of the rich forest soil. Now that's recycling. Fact 3, they spread pollen. How about a sweet, juicy apple for lunch or a chocolate bar for dessert? Without insects, there would be no such things. There would also be no oranges, plums, watermelon, berries, or hundreds of other foods we love. The insects that make these foods possible are called pollinators. They carry powdery pollen from one tree to another. The pollen fertilizes the flowers, which allows them to make seeds and fruits. Bees and butterflies are some of the most famous pollinators, but many other kinds of insects, including some wasps, flies, and beetles, such as the thick-legged flower beetle, can be good pollinators too. Fact 4. They make things people use. You probably know that honeybees make honey, but each individual bee makes only a tiny bit. In fact, all the bees at Wright will together produce only a little more than a teaspoon of honey in their lives. Bees aren't the only hardworking insects. If you've ever worn a silk shirt or necktie, you've gotten a good look at another insect's handiwork. The silk we wear is made by caterpillars called silkworms. They use their silk to make cocoons in which they turn into moss. People raise silkworms carefully, unwind the silk threads from the cocoons, and use them to make strong, soft cloth. Fact 5, they feed animals. Every second of the day, countless insects are being gobbled up by countless other creatures. And with good reason. Insects are full of protein and healthy fat. Many kinds of animals eat nothing but insects, and others eat insects whenever they can. The common big-eared bat may eat its body weight in insects every night. A plump katydid makes a good first course. Of course, you have to be able to catch insects to eat them. With a sudden thack, a panther chameleon uses its sticky tongue to snag an insect meal. And the scissor-tailed flycatcher catches a stink bug, not a fly, right out of the air. And they also feed plants and even people. Many plants get the nutrients they need from sunlight and the soil they grow in. But carnivorous plants get some of their energy from animals, mostly insects. See the drops on the red hairs on the Cape sundew plant at left? They're sticky enough to trap insects, such as a fly. Then the plant's slender leaf curls around the trapped insects and turns it into food. In many parts of the world, people eat bugs, too. Insects are nutritious and easy to find, and many people think they're delicious. Insects, such as the leafcutter ants on the chocolate treats below, can be sweet, or they can be savory, like the roasted grubs. So how will you take your bugs? Roasted, fried, or dipped in chocolate? It's true, some bugs are bothersome, but plenty aren't pests at all. Set off on a quest for the best kind of bugs and see who you meet. Got good bugs? Bug hunt. Good bugs are all around. Do you know which ones live in your yard or neighborhood? Grab a magnifying glass and a field guide to insects and go out to find. Here's what to look for. Predator insects such as lacewings, ladybugs, praying mantises, and ground beetles, which eat bad bugs. Parasitic wasps, which lay eggs in certain troublesome caterpillars and other pests. Pollinators, such as bees, butterflies, and moths. Recyclers, such as carrion beetles. Keep a list of what you find. Soon you'll be an expert on the benefits of bugs. Snug bugs. Want to make your yard cozy, your yard or garden cozier place for good bugs to hang out? Share these ideas in your family. 1. Skip pesticides. They kill the good guys along with the pests, and they aren't healthy for the environment, people, or pets. 2. Plant flowers that provide food for helpful insects. Try herbs such as dill, cilantro, fennel, and parsley. These good bugs also feed on native flowers such as cornflowers, milkweed, goldenrod, and bee balm. 3. Aim for variety. Choose lots of different kinds of flowers that bloom at different times. That way you'll attract good bugs all season long. 4. Provide shelter. Trees, shrubs, ground cover, and native grasses make a safe place for bugs to rest. Mulch and stepping stones are nice to hide under. Add water. Place some rocks in a saucer and keep it filled with fresh water during dry spells. The rocks make good places to rest while taking a sip. Give them a good home and good bugs will soon be hard at work helping out in your garden. Swimming with sharks. No, these kids aren't in any danger. They're discovering how cool sharks can be. Wade in and see for yourself. My name is Jillian, and I love sharks. I've always loved swimming and learning about what I'd see underwater. By the age of 5, I decided I wanted to be a marine biologist, a scientist who studies ocean life. And now that's excitedly what I am. I saw my first wild shark when I was 8 and have been obsessed with sharks ever since. I was surprised to hear things like sharks are bad, horrible monsters. People don't have to love sharks, of course, but they should get their facts straight. So I decided to start a program called Sharks for Kids. When the word sharks and kids are in the same sentence, most people are like, what? Wait. I've spent thousands of hours around sharks. Like any wildlife, they simply deserve our understanding and respect. My team and I do activities both in and out of classrooms. And we take kids on field trips so they can see how we study sharks in the wild. The students in the boat at the bottom left are getting ready for an ocean adventure. They're also learning how to be comfortable and safe in the water. That's me at left with the girl wearing the yellow mask. I noticed that she was shy, staying on the beach and struggling with her snorkel. I said, forget the snorkel, just hold your breath and stick your face in. I took her hand and we walked slowly into the water together. When she finally dipped her head under and saw how incredible the ocean was, she was all smiles. Not every shark is big and toothy like the ones you may see in scary shows or sometimes hear about. Nurse sharks, for example, spend a lot of time just chilling out in the sea bottom, no matter who's watching. Fun fin fact. The sign for shark is holding your hand on your head like a shark fin. In our programs, we teach kids just how amazing sharks are. There are more than 500 shark species in the world, so it's no surprise that there are many differences between them. Sharks also do really cool things. Some, for example, can leap clear out of the water while others glow in the dark. We also know that sharks are quite intelligent. Now let's check out a boy having fun while swimming with some southern stingrays. He knows a ray is basically just a shark's flat cousin. If you could smush a small shark, its gills and mouth would move underneath its fins, would get thinner and wider. Viola, a little sea pancake. The young lemon sharks do not hatch from egg cases. Their moms swam near the shore to give birth. Once a baby lemon is born, the cord attaches it to its mom, breaks. Guess what that leaves on the baby? A belly button. Each mom then swims back out to sea, leaving her newborn in a shallow mangrove nursery like the one at the top right. The little lemon will find plenty to eat and places to hide as it swims into a tangle of bigger mangrove leaves and roots. Soon it will meet up with other young lemons to hang out with for the next few years. My team invites kids to join us in the shallow mangroves as we collect information. At right, I'm holding a young lemon shark while my teammate will also insert an ID tag under the shark's skin, and we clip off a tiny bit of fin to collect some DNA. The DNA helps us figure out which sharks are related. We can also discover whether adult females return to the same areas they were born in to have babies of their own. The more we learn, the better we can protect these sharks. and their mangrove habitat. And the more the kids learn, the more likely they will continue this important work when they grow up. That's why it's fun when they learn how much alike kids and sharks can be. For example, like a lemon shark, you have buddies, right? And a belly button? Maybe you even once spent some time in a nursery. Can you think of other ways you're like a shark? I wish all kids love sharks the way I do, but if they at least understand instead of fear them, that would be fantastic too. Fun fin fact. Lemon sharks don't look or taste like the fruit, but their skin does have a lemony yellow tint. Ask Scarlett. Question. Does a stingray barb grow back after the ray stings something? Answer. A stingray usually doesn't lose an entire barb after stinging something, but it does grow a new barb every year or two to replace the old one. Sometimes the new barb appears before the old one falls off, so a stingray may have two barbs for a while, or in some species, most of the time, double trouble, right? Question. How do homing pigeons find their way home? Answer. Pigeons do have an amazing ability to find their way home, even from thousands of miles away. They have several ways of doing this. For instance, they may use the sun to steer by. They may also find their way back by picking up a trail of odors they detected on their way out. They can do this even when people take them in cages to someplace new and set them free. Also, pigeons use what you call built-in compass in their heads. This works a lot like compasses that people use. Telling the bird the direction they're headed, finally, as the bird's near home, they rely on the sight of familiar landmarks such as mountains, buildings, and roads to help them on the last leg of their journey. Question. How do squirrels hang on to trees so firmly? Squirrels have sharp claws that dig into even the smoothest bark. They also have special ankle joints in their back feet. These joints allow their feet to turn backwards, and this lets them get a firm grip when going headfirst down a tree trunk. This has been the August edition of Ranger Rick, published by the National Wildlife Federation. I'm Chris Radio volunteer Linda Lyden.